Welcome to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is Rich Siegel, founder of Barebones Software and makers of that famous editor, BB Edit. Rich, good afternoon. Thank you for being on the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Happy Monday.
I've been wanting to have you on the show for a long, long time because I was a very early user of BB Edit back when I had, maybe a Macintosh Quadra, something like that, or maybe a 2CI with Mac OS 9.
that might have been in the right time frame. The first freeware versions started coming out in the world around 91.
Yeah, and ever since then, it's been my go-to editor. I've been using it. It's the first app I would ever put on a computer, on a Macintosh, because it's just so essential for me, and I've followed you along and been a user every version. By the way, we should mention to the listeners that you have some pets in the background.
I do, and I apologize if the background noise is a little distracting because they've been quiet all day, and all of a sudden they decided to start singing.
That's fine. Sounds great, actually.
Good.
Sounds like we're outdoors.
It's like sometimes it's like being in the jungle.
It is. So, given that long history of BB Edit, I've always wondered, how did that all get started? There must have been something in your career that diverted you from what you were doing into this idea of a text editor.
Well, actually, at the time, it was my career. In the late 80s, 87 through actually 92, I was working at a company that, when I started there, was called Think Technologies. And they made their name doing development tools for the Mac. And they did really the first commercial versions of what we would think of today as an IDE, an integrated development environment. There was an editor and a compiler and a debugger all in one application. And so I was, you know, I was a tools guy really from the very beginning of my career. And as we were working there, there sort of came up in the office this repeated need for a general purpose text editor that wasn't baked into an IDE. So I took one of Think's products, which was actually a library for writing text editors, and sort of used that to build the core of BB Edit, of what we think of today as BB Edit. And that was something that I spent a lot of time, sort of nights and weekends and spare moments at work and getting feedback from the office to work on. So that took a couple of years to bring up to speed.
Did you start working on that while you were at Think and then decided to break off and start your own company? How did that work?
Well, I did start to work on it while I was there. And what happened was, it really stayed sort of a hobby project until actually the mid-90s. And in between, the first thing that happened was in April of 92, I let a freeware version out into the world. And that gained a lot of traction. And eventually what happened was that the time that I was spending on doing support and writing documentation and adding features and fixing bugs and all of the things that go along with shipping a product really sort of grew to the point where I needed to make a decision as to whether I was going to stick to a day job or try and make a full-time business out of this.
And that's a tough decision to make.
It is a tough decision to make. It's not one to make lightly, and it's not one to make in a vacuum. But I had you know, a couple of co-founders who filled in gaps in my own knowledge and who could do things that I couldn't and see to operations and business matters and so. We made a decision. We did a couple of bundle deal. We had a bundle deal that brought in a little bit of money, and we had a small loan from one of the co-founders, and that was enough. that was enough to get us started, and that was enough to sort of begin the process of launching a business.
What was it like to develop software in OS, what, 7? Mac OS 7?
Yeah, 7, 8, 9, even the tail end of 6. It was very different from it the way it is today. If you had a bug that crashed the application, you might end up in the source level debugger provided by the IDE, but on the other hand, a hard enough crash would take out the entire machine.
Lovely.
Sort of learned quickly how to live in a machine level debugger, and there were a couple of good ones in those days. One of them was called MaxBug, which was provided by Apple, and there was a third party one called Tmon. And sort of depending on who you were and how you liked to work, one debugger was better than another, or a better fit, I guess I should say, because they were really both pretty good. And so you'd spend a lot of time debugging at the machine level.
Wow.
If you spent long enough in the debugger at the machine level, just stopped in the debugger, your machine would lose network connectivity because there were things that depended on clock interrupts happening, for example.
Did the developer relations people you were working with have a sort of a profound Unix-based technical perspective and say, well, yeah, this is the way things are going, or where their attitude was, well, this is a Mac, this is glorious, live with it?
Well, in those days, before Mac OS X, it would be hard to call either way. One thing that I sort of very clearly remember from those days is that the folks in developer relations were very, very heavily invested in seeing developers be successful, and they, you know, Apple was at the time, they were much smaller than they are today, and I think it could reasonably be said they were also hungrier, both in reality, in objective reality, but also because, of course, they were doomed all the time. and so it was, you know, the developer conference didn't sell out in 30 seconds.
I remember. I started going in around 93, and you could stand at the entrance there at the San Jose Convention Center. You could stand by the blue doors, go running down the aisle, and be in the front row.
Right. or buy a ticket the week before, or maybe get a call from developer relations saying, hey, you know, we've got a few extra seats at the developers conference. Are you interested?
Yeah.
I think that dynamic, both within Apple and Apple's relationship to the industry and Apple's relationship with its developers, was such that it was very easy to build connections within Apple. I mean, I remember in many cases being no more than a step or two away from somebody working on a core part of the OS who could either answer my question or turn around and ask somebody who could.
Was that instrumental in the success of the product?
I would say so. It was instrumental in making sure that we could deliver a better product. I'll certainly say that much. I think the success of the product depended on many factors, and getting good support from Apple Developer Services and getting good support from the OS and generally good platform support, I think, was a big part of it.
Did you have any serious competition at that point, or did you build the BB editor because there was no real good editor at that time?
Well, at the time, there were a couple of other products out at the time, and you know, the text editor market has always sort of been a pretty competitive one, because that's the one thing that every developer has an opinion on. It's one of the primary points of connection between a developer and their code, or between the developer and the computer. So code editors are very much like vehicles in which you'll find people who are fiercely loyal to one maker model, and that's because that particular maker model fits especially well with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there has always been plenty of room in the market for editors with different approaches, and it was true in those days as well.
So I think bare bones, I'm guessing, was because this was a very basic, simple text editor, glorious in its capabilities, but simple in its presentation. Is that where bare bones came from, the idea that this was going to be minimalist, or was there something else going on?
Yeah, that really was kind of where it came from. And this was also back in the days when Emacs was an acronym that stood for 80 megs and constantly swapping. And so there was sort of this attitude of, you know, people were constantly trying to port Emacs to the Mac and asking where Emacs was for the Mac. And we'd look at Emacs on Unix systems and say,
I used it.
Right, exactly. You know, I grew up, almost literally grew up using Emacs. And
it's like your bird wants to break out of the cage there.
As a matter of fact, he does.
He wants to be on the show, too.
he wants a piece of my headphones, and he's already got a piece of them, and he's not getting any more. So Emacs was this thing that did everything and was difficult to use. And this was on a platform. You know, by contrast, the Mac OS was a platform where UI and user experience mattered, and it was less important that a product do everything than it was that it have a good presentation and be usable. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of part of where our aesthetic came from, was we're going to keep this nice, clean, low friction, put things where you need them to be, have the minimum amount of Chrome getting in the way, user interface Chrome, of course, we didn't call it that at the time, and make it as usable as possible. Put the key features there. Multi-file search and replace was a really big one early on, and being able to open big files and edit things fast. And a lot of these things aren't really flashy, right? They're just there. They just work. They're reliable, dependable. And that reliability and dependability has sort of been at our core for many years. And I think that's one of the reasons that BB Edit gained so much traction early on. And I think
that's why I loved it too.
Right. And people still do. People still, they learn that, they rely on that. And so we sort of like being quietly dependable.
Now, I'm curious about that aspect of it, because as we know, throughout all the versions, we're at version 11 now, BB Edit has become more capable, does markup and lots of new features along the way. How have you wrestled, if you have in fact, wrestled with this concept of bare bones and keeping it minimalist and beautiful and simple, and yet adding the features? How have you worked through that?
Well, it's a good question, and it's a tough nut to crack. One of the ways in which we manage that is we do have to say no a lot. Folks will occasionally ask us for something that just doesn't fit in with what we think this product should be. And so we have to say, that's just not a place where you want to go right now.
What's the most popular request where you wrinkle your nose and go, no, I don't think so?
No, I think the most common one we say no to is tabs. We get a surprising quantity of requests from folks who want a browser-like user interface in the editor where there are tabs for open documents. And, you know, I'll tell you, I understand where they're coming from. I use tabs in my web browser, and I have the same complaints about them that I would if my editor did it. They're fine if you have five documents open. And if you get past that, they just don't scale. And we hear so often from folks who routinely have dozens of documents open in a single window, and tabs just wouldn't work for that.
Do you think some of the momentum or the triggers for these requests comes from fashion and what's happening in browsers?
Perhaps a certain amount of it, yeah. A web browser is probably the most frequently used piece of software on any given platform. I assert that without having necessarily data to back it up.
I think you're right.
Yeah. But I don't think I'd be wrong. You'll see some new user interface device in a browser, and you'll think, wow, that's really kind of neat. I wonder where else I could use that. Or, if you're a user, you might want other applications to resemble the browser experience.
Lots of temptations.
Exactly. We'll get a certain amount of that.
Well, Rich, we need to take a short commercial break right now. So when we return, I want to ask you about some of the other products in your product line from Bare Bones and some other things. We'll be right back.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
And we are back. Thanks, Kelly. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, is the nature of your development team. I mean, how do you bake a product like this? Tell us a little bit about how things get done and who codes on what, and are you like the quarterback or are you coding daily?
Well, the answer is yes.
All of the above.
all of the above. I have not yet stopped writing code on this product. And the way that we've gotten here historically and currently is everybody who works on the product has a specialization. So there's somebody who understands the core, and there's somebody who does a little bit of framework engineering, and there's somebody who understands performance and stability, and there's somebody who is very, very good at solving the problems that are involved in writing a text editing engine. And there's somebody who is very, very good at solving the problems involved in supporting different languages.
Sounds like there's a lot of people who are required.
Well, not as many as you'd think, because a lot of times those people are a lot of times multiple roles are filled by one person in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So, it might sound like we have a team of 50 and they're all working on this at once, and the answer is going to be somewhat different from that. We generally have a much smaller number, usually down in the single digits.
Do people work from home or are you all in one place?
At the moment, everybody works from home, and we convene periodically to sort of sync up, and we rely a lot on instant messaging to stay in touch. And
do you use Slack? Just curious.
No. Slack is... it's funny. So we might be the only people on the planet who don't use Slack.
You might be.
Everybody uses Slack. No, we use We use Google Hangouts, and we use iMessage. There's a lot of point-to-point stuff going on.
Okay.
And so the other thing that sort of ties it all together is that we have, over many years, evolved sort of a set of shared disciplines, a process, but not for its own sake. We've figured out what works and what doesn't, and we have certain rules in place and guidelines, and so as a result, everybody's very much on the same page when it comes to how, not at a character level, but it's more at a conceptual level, you know, how to write good code. There is actually a very, very old book called Writing Solid Code that came from Microsoft. And it's still an excellent reference for anybody who wants to program. Anybody who wants to ship product, because it describes a lot of really good disciplines involved in writing code which is fast and reliable and maintainable.
So when did Text Wrangler get introduced? And what was the motivation for that?
So let's see, Text Wrangler, I don't remember exactly what year that was. I think it was 2007. I'd have to look it up. And the notion for Text Wrangler came about because in the mid-2000s, the Mac market, the Mac software market, had sort of gotten to a place where BBEdit was a premium priced product. I think it was $150 or $199, one of those price points. And we're looking around at the marketplace, and here we go, Text Wrangler 1.0 actually was in 2003, a little bit earlier than I recall. And we needed something to come in at a lower price point that people could more readily spend. And so in early 2003, we did Text Wrangler as an inexpensive product, and it didn't have all of BBEdit's features, but it was built on the same core, so it was every bit the product under the hood.
And but it's free now, right?
It is free now. And what we decided, and we decided to do that in, let's see, 2006, 7, 8. It's such a long time ago now. And that was really kind of a general response to downward pricing pressure in the market.
Have you found that people have embraced Text Wrangler as a result of that downward pricing and stuck with it? Or is it maybe hopefully the other way around, where just a few people try it and then they end up upgrading to BBEdit?
Well, what we're finding is that people, unsurprisingly, and we kind of knew this would happen, people love free. And so there's, I think, the better part of a million people who have downloaded Text Wrangler and presumably have used it at least once.
You must be both pleased and annoyed at the same time.
I'm pleased to hear that there are so many folks who are using Text Wrangler and getting good value out of it. I won't say that I'm annoyed because that would, you know, that would suggest that somehow I expected otherwise, and I really didn't. Would I mind if some reasonable percentage of those decided they wanted to upgrade to BBEdit? Absolutely not. Would not hurt my feelings at all.
BBEdit continues to be a good business.
That's right. And so there's a line really to be walked there. We encourage folks to register Text Wrangler. We encourage Text Wrangler users to upgrade to BBEdit. We'll occasionally send out email to folks who have registered and who have opted into to getting email from us, sort of letting them know that they can upgrade. And we get, every time we do that, we get a little bit of traction. But of course, you want to be careful about how many times you go to that well.
Sure.
Because it's very easy to be tempted into saying, well, hey, you know, they gave us their email address. What can we do with this?
That has never occurred to anybody before, has it?
And so we, you know, we work very hard at earning and keeping the trust of our customers.
Yeah, that's another reason why I've always been attracted to your company, because there was always that subliminal sense of the right way to do business. Beautiful code, great product, honor, good business relationships with customers. That's been an enduring, attractive feature for me throughout the years as a customer.
And I'm glad to hear that, because that really is something that's very important to us. So when I hear that message has gotten across, then you know that's important to me.
Do you think BB Edit at version 11 has maybe reached its peak in maturity, or do you think maybe there's long life ahead as OS X evolves?
Well, I haven't run out of things to do yet. There's you know, a text editor is a very ripe platform for creativity. The internet is built on plain text. The world is built on plain text, as in technological terms. And there is, to my mind, no shortage of things to do. So in terms of what the product is capable of doing or becoming, I would not bet against anything. And of course, yeah, the platform is always evolving. There were many big tectonic shifts that we went through over the history of BB Edit. There was 68K to PowerPC. First there are the hardware changes, right? There's 68K to PowerPC and PowerPC to Intel, and who knows, someday Intel to something else.
And then there was that big jump from the classic OS 9 to the modern Unix underpinnings of OS 10. Was that a tough transition?
As OS transitions go, that was a pretty significant one. It required us to go through almost every line of code in the product just to update and modernize.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
But curiously, I don't think it was necessarily the most difficult transition we had to go through. I think 68K to PowerPC was probably the one that touched the most code in the product.
Interesting. Interesting. So I have a jackpot product. I have a jackpot question for you.
Okay.
All right, you ready? Brace yourself. Will there ever be BB Edit for iOS, iPad Pro?
Questions that contain ever are really tough to answer. because I can say, well, yes, as an unfrocked physics major, I can say, before the heat death of the universe, all things are possible.
I had to ask. You don't have to answer me, but yeah, say what you want.
so when the iPad Pro came out, I looked at it and said, okay, well, so that is an iOS device that I can imagine running BB Edit on.
Interesting.
Now, there are, and certainly not the first time we've had people ask about BB Edit for iOS. They, you know, asked about it when the iPad came out. One of the problems, I use the term loosely, one of the tricky parts of BB Edit for iOS is that almost by definition, it would be a different product. BB Edit isn't just an editing engine with some stuff wrapped around it. There's multi-file search and replace, and you know, how do you present that on a machine that doesn't have that ostensibly doesn't have a file system?
Not one you can see anyway.
Right. There's built-in support for source control systems such as Subversion or Git. and actually we still even support Perforce. And supporting those requires, again, kind of a user model which doesn't really yet fit in with the way the iPad works.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there are data sources on the iPad that, that folks are using. There's iCloud Drive and people having their documents available to them, and there's Dropbox support. And so there are ways that you can have texts on your iPad and open them. And of course, we also do the built-in FTP and SFTP stuff.
Right.
And so, sure, we can do some of that. And it kind of comes down to, how can we present this stuff to the user in a usable way.
Well, if you ever decide to do it, I'll be customer number 0001.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, we're just about running out of time here. I've got just a couple more questions. Is there something you want to say about where you think your company is going? We talked about this in the pre-show. Future products, vision. I mean,
it's difficult to say. We don't really talk about what we're working on in long term, which that's a policy I learned many, many years ago.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Even before I started the company. And it's one that really works well for us because it prevents us from painting ourselves into a corner.
I know not to ask about specific products. That would be a bad idea. But,
as I said, BB Edit itself is fertile ground for new ideas. And actually, we are working on an upgrade to that we've been... in public beta testing, that's 11.5. And if you go over to the BB Edit Google group, you'll see that every few days or so, I post a new beta build notice. Yojimbo is a product that we're still maintaining and supporting, and we're pretty happy with where that product is in terms of its core feature set. There are some things that we'd like to improve on a little bit. Syncing continues to be a real challenge, sort of the trademark saying in the Mac developer community is syncing is hard.
It is. I know. I've talked to some other developers about it.
And
it is.
And so it's tough because there's not a good solution there. Everything has to be sort of purpose built for the product in hand. But as I said, we're working on that and so Yojimbo is a mature supported product. We're pretty happy with that. And sure, iOS, who knows, right? One of the other difficult parts with iOS is having a viable business market for it.
Right.
And there's probably a whole other podcast in that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think we're going to have to wrap it up, actually. I want to thank you for being on the show. Tell the listeners how to contact you on the web and Twitter.
Well, first I want to say thanks for having me and thanks for listening. Our website is www.barebones.com. My Twitter handle is Siegel, @SIEGEL. And there is actually a Twitter handle for BB Edit as well, @BBEdit.
Cool. Well, this has been delightful. And listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show. And thank you for coming by as well. We'll see you next time on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.